Welcome to the Developer Tribe. It's good to have you here for episode 7 of season 2 as we unpack the practice and process of developers, educators, and beyond. Today's is a little different, talking about esports, its similarities and differences with high performance sport, and its utility in the parent-child relationship. A really interesting take on sports psychology and team building from our guest today. As always, thanks for being here, however you got here, and with that, let's jump in. My guest today is a sports psychologist and coach based in Hong Kong, having studied in the UK in Sunderland and Northumbria. He is heavily involved in the development of athletes in Asian game development and, with a special interest in esports, is working towards the release of his book that is being published soon and preparing for 2 world championships. It's a real pleasure to welcome Alex Tang to the pod.
Hi, nice to meet you all. Hi, team.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. Thank you so much. So look, let's really start with the book. What's the topic and how did it come about?
Basically, that's just a book written for child development and parenting in Hong Kong. As you know, that the Asian culture is a lot different compared to the culture in the UK. It's more like a very, very strict parenting structure. So the parents weren't allowed, you know, the kids to play video games. We weren't allowed kids to play at all. So they just want the kids to focus in study. So all they do is just, you know, after school, they have to do their homeworks and they have to do different, you know, private tutorials. So, but esports or video gaming is been very, very popular around the world, not only in Hong Kong or in Asian countries. And so it's something that you can't stop as parents, can't stop the kids to play games, but also in the other hands, parents have to, you know, have to take a balance between studies and gaming for the child. So the book is about basically educating, first of all, what esports really is to parents. So most of the parents don't even know what esports is. Is it just playing games? Is it just, you know, addictive, like gaming? They have no idea. So it's about teaching them what is esports first, and secondly, it's about teaching them how do they use esports as a tool to communicate with their parents. How do you use esports to basically, you know, it's just like comics book in the 1970s. They don't know when they, first of all, they think the comics, you know, it's really bad, it's arousing and lesbian, and it's about aggressions. But they don't know that, what they don't know is the comics can be a good activity for parents and child. It's same as esports nowadays. It could be a really good parents-child activities. So it's just teaching them how to use esports as a tool and how to use esports to communicate with their own child.
I mean, that's absolutely fascinating. And I grew up playing video games, so I'm going to show my age here. We had a Nintendo when I was, I think, five, maybe six. And so yeah. I've really grown up with the different generations of video game consoles, and you know, sadly don't have any right now. But I can remember not having arguments with my parents over it, but almost having to feel like I had to qualify the time that I was spending on video games. But of course, it's so different now with everything being online, being able to play against others around the world. So look, just qualify for me and clarify what esports is, because it says esports, but it doesn't necessarily mean a simulation of a sport necessarily.
Yep. Basically, esports is, first of all, it has to be a competitions. It's about playing. It's about winning or losing. It's a match. It's match-based. And the rules is well-known. So the rules in Hong Kong playing League of Legends will be the same rules as you play in anywhere in the world, in the UK, even in Brazil. They use the same rules, so the same set of rules, and it's the competitions using the same games. And every games has to go back to the basic. It's like chess. You have to go back to the very basic, you know, to play the same thing in the same time and in the same set of games, same set of durations. So the rules has to be standardized, and you and got to be a fair games. It's always have to be fair, and always it's about the fairness. So you know, in the world of gaming, you can always buy yourself. You know, in FIFA, it's very famous. You know, you can buy better players. It's not like this in esports. You have to go back to zero, like 0.0. It's like chess. Go back to the zero, basic. Then you start from there. That's basically that's esports. And it's interesting for you to mention the difference between sports and esports. Of course, esports won't be, you know, as physical as sports, obviously, but I'm talking about the collective requirements, the reaction time, the decisions making, the discipline that an esports athlete has to have and has to commit. It's no difference than actual sports. It's just, you know, it's just less physical, but it doesn't mean it's not, you know, in terms of collectively, it's a lot harder than sports, in terms of using your hand eyes coordinations, your reactions time, your decisions making, etc. So I think it's less physical, but in terms of psychological, it's a lot harder, and it's basically got to be harder than the traditional sports.
I guess possibly because of the duration, right, of the competition at a high performance level. And I do want to talk about the high performance. You know, we'll come to that, but just to pick up on the what the parent issues generally are with video games. You know, I've had issues before where parents have come to me as a football coach to talk about their child playing too many video games. You know, that is the main one that comes up, that there's not a physical element. You know, they're not moving enough. You know, they're worried that their kid is just sitting in front of a screen too long. I presume that you kind of address that a little bit in the book, I'm sure. So, what? How do you come to an agreement, a negotiation with parents to understand where the line is for too much and what is okay?
Actually, your questions have two stages. The first stage is why is gaming addictive? You know, the recently DSM-5 have developed a category of gaming addictions. So you have to know why it's addictive, because I'm talking about video gaming. It's about the storyline. You always, you know, you always are chasing the next chapter. Or next chapter is better. And the gaming, the game developers, they will, you know, they bring a lot of requirements, or they will give you different rewards to motivate the players to continue to play and continue to chase the next, you know, the next chapter. To become better, they will give you a little rewards. That's you know, to develop games, usually the game developers have a bunch of psychologists, you know, to design a game. It's about having the kids to be in the flow. So which means the game can be too boring, but on the other hand, it can be too challenging. So it has to be right in the middle to let the kids to enjoy the flow. That's first. That's why game is very can be very addictive. What I suggest to address that, of course, first of all, you can buy the book. Secondly, I It's about setting a goal, you know. It's don't try to stop your kids from playing. Don't try to introduce punishments. It work differently now, nowadays especially. You have to understand their social norms, you know. They have different friends. They're playing the same game, having the same times, you know. They're comparing themselves with their own friend zones, their social groups. So it would be very, very difficult for them to completely drop the game, you know, and get isolated in the school. That's a very, very common issue. So first of all, the parents has to be very, you know, understanding. You have to communicate. You have to understand what the kids are doing. Secondly, try to set some short-term goal with them, you know. It's about for example, having time frame goals, like 2 hours, what you can achieve in these 2 hours in gaming. So you know, the parents and the kids know, both know that what they are actually chasing. It's not like, you know, just keep, you know, just not, it's not like reading a book. So keep going to the next chapter, keep going to the next chapter. It's not like this. It's about setting the right goal with the realistic time frame. So my suggestions is just simple. First of all, understand the game, understand what is esports, understand what the kids are doing, try to learn the language, you know. Before the communications, you have to learn the language. Same as coaching, right? You have to have the same language with your with the players. Secondly, set some short-term goals with them, set some process goals, performance goals, and outcome goals with them. With your kids, it can first stop your kids from continuous playing for God knows how many hours. Secondly, it's a good way for building up your bonding with your own kids.
Yeah, that's really interesting, and it is so different to when I was a teenager and playing. You know, we weren't able to get online and play against it. You know, that came in as I became a late teenager. So I can definitely think of times where I've just sat and I've played. You know, one time the Tiger Woods game was a particular. Yeah, I really enjoyed playing, and hours gone by. So I absolutely hear this in terms of setting goals. It makes perfect sense. Let's shift to high performance, and I know you're preparing then for these two world championships. Tell us what that looks like for the area of esports.
Well, it's just same as, you know, I think it's the same as traditional sports. So me myself, I've been coaching or becoming a sports psychologist with a Premier League's team in Hong Kong. Of course, as well as in the UK, I did some coaching. It's just same, I mean, the four categories, psychological, technical, tactical, and physical. In terms of esports, we do the same principle. The only way that I don't want my players to do it is, you know, just play and play for 12 hours, 14 hours. Because I was a consultant in one of the best team in the world, based in China. And what they were doing, you know, is just keep practicing, keep playing for 12 hours nonstop. And that's, you know, the it works at the beginnings, but after a while, when, you know, when the other countries have a de has developed a training system, then you will start to realize that your training is less effective. Your players will get tired or frustrated very easily. That's why they need me. They approach me because, you know, the performance starting to drop. They start to lose world championship, and that's why I think that for high performance athletes in esports, they really need structure, effective training. It's just same as, you know, traditional sports really. It's about how do you get prepared psychologically, tactically, how do you play different tactics with different teams, and different technical issues that are how can you improve, in terms of the technical side? Is it that your hand is too slow? Is it that you have to set some short keys, for example, in terms of League of Legends? So it's this minor stuff actually can bring you an effective trainings as well as a structure with again setting baby step goals, which you can really track your process, really tracking the whole training. That's how the quantifier training, that's how it works in the high level esports training, in my point of view.
Just to clarify, so a short key, right, is maybe a key on a keyboard that they set for a certain action, right?
Yep. For
Okay.
example, you press one, it means blah blah blah.
Right.
Press two, it means otherwise. So
Okay.
you can set some short keys.
So do you think when they approached you, you said they'd been training, 12 hours a day, they've been, doing these long, do you think maybe they expected you to say that either that was okay or that they needed to do more? And it was just a case of having better psychological skills to be able to deal with that duration. Do you think that maybe was what they were expecting?
Yeah, I think so. I think that it's very hard, to admit that your training method is wrong. It's very, very hard. So I have to spend my time, to get better, to sell them the concept of to play better, you have to play less. This kind of concept is very difficult. For example, I was talking to one of the director in the football associations in Hong Kong. We were talking, he asked my advice about how do there's a plan about 2035. How do you get Hong Kong to be kind of a part of the World Cup? How can you move forward with the football nationally? I think what I advise is I think there's a plan. It works really well in the UK, but not in Hong Kong. In the UK, they do different terms. It's rugby terms in the, I don't know, it's in the winter. Rugby terms, winter, hockey terms, summer, and middle, you have like crickets and something else,
Sure,
basketball, I don't know.
seasonal, yeah.
Yeah, seasonal sports to keep them hungry, which, I think there was a research talking about the effective of having, seasonal sports. First, you can build all-rounder athletes, build different muscles, build with different psychological techniques. For example, the decision makings of swimming will be a lot different than in football. In team sports and individual sports, the technical, the collectively, the psychological, I say requirements is a lot difference. So first you can train up different muscles physically and train up different psychological methods or psychological abilities in different sports over the over annual over the 1 year time span. And secondly, you can have the hungry, you can keep your players hungry. It's a very rare, it's a very common actually. It's very common in Hong Kong that the kids keep playing football for 1 year, 2 year, 3 years, and they will drop out very, very quickly because they keep playing it every day, every single day. You get tired. It's very normal for kids, and it's very different. If you can keep them hungry, they can actually if even not even though they are not training football, they will think about football. There's a famous term nowadays called visualizations. You can train just using your brain just to think visualizations, and that you can actually improve. Of course, physically you have to, keep yourself going, but I think it's a lot more benefit to have a structured training, structured programs, especially if you're in high performance sports.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, and you were speaking about an early specialization issue in football. It's fairly common to call football a late specialization sport now, and certainly I've advised many parents over the last few years of allow them to go and play basketball and baseball and swimming and do these other things as well. It's so important, and try to explain where some of the skills, even from a tactical point of view, that they might learn by going to, say, basketball, because it's such it's much more of a transition game. The transitions happen much more often. Bring that back to the football arena and the football, and who knows, maybe your kid will turn out to be a pro basketballer. It's to have a wide screen of opportunities rather than narrowing it down to just the one. So I totally understand that. What I don't understand, and I'll be honest, I've never quite got the difference of these two, is visualization and imagery. And I think I understand that they are two different skills. Is that right? And could you try and teach me which is which?
Basically, visualization is about more about having a mental image or mental pictures, and imagery is about considering a mental process that can involve movements, involve five senses. So imagery is about, you can have something to touch. It's about smelling, seeing, but visualizations is just having a mental images or clips or pictures in your brain. I think that's the biggest biggest difference in terms of imagery and visualizations. It's about, again, imagery is about involve all senses, all five senses that you can have.
And I've never nailed that. I've visualization I find quite easy. I'm a bit of a daydreamer, so I find it quite easy to pull up images and to experience it in a visual sense. But to bring in those other senses, I find very difficult. But the power of it is undeniable. I love telling this story of a UK javelin thrower, Backley, who it was in the early 90s, I think. He'd damaged his shoulder in the lead up to training for the Olympics. Of course, you've got 4 years in between to train. He's damaged his shoulder and realizes he's not going to be able to train for something like a year and a half or 2 years of this process. Instead of just concentrating on physical therapy and maybe having some mental issues during that time, he used visualization and supposedly spent the amount of time that he would have been out training the same amount of time visualizing everything he would have done in that training session. And it obviously worked, because he then, later down the line, went to that Olympics, got a silver medal. That's a less tangible one. There's another one that was really interesting. It was a basketball group. They split them in half. Half went and did a strength and conditioning program, and half did visualization of the strength and conditioning program. And the group that did the visualization got somewhere between 60 and 70% of the gains, the muscle gains, that the group that actually did the physical work got, which, I mean, that's astounding.
Yeah, because I think it's about, even if visualizations, even if you're just thinking about a peak performance, your brain will still react. It's just about the physically, of course, you're not reacting because you're just doing visualizations, but the brain is actually, still responding. Some is still activated, the brain areas are still activated as you're doing visualizations. It's same as you're actually doing the actual sports.
Yeah, which is just fascinating. And how much more we can use it. So tell us, a little bit more about your role with this Chinese group, the the world champions, and what your role actually looks like. How do you support them in developing the psychological skills that they need?
Actually, there are two roles, two things that I'm going to do that, or I did. I mean, there are two roles that, or two things that I will do, or I would do, or I did. It's first thing is about the team. I think it's a, I'm not trying to be stereotype, but I think it's the Asian things that. I don't know if it's good to talk about, but I think it's actually from my point of view, I think you have a lot of dynamics. The group dynamics is a lot different. It's a lot different from a European team compared to Asian teams. There are always, politics, group dynamics, in Asian team, especially in the Chinese team. It's no offense. It's not about the races. I'm the same race, but I think group dynamics is a massive problem. Everyone just want their own benefits to the max. So they will start lying to each other. They will talk things behind the back. Talk to the boss, I don't know, talk to the managers. So I think team buildings is a very massive word in terms of team games, especially in the Asian countries. It's about building the trust between the athletes. After that, build the trust with the coach and the athletes. It's very it's very important to have the trust, and also the last thing I would do is make them or lead them to think that they have the motivation to change. So they want to actually change. They want to actually improve for the team. And I think that's the winning mentality. Winning mentality is about, to performing the best, not only for yourself, but for the team, for the coaches, for the staff. So it's a lot more than yourself. So I have these motivations. Of course, I will set different goals with the team. I will go and do a lot of team buildings at the very beginnings. And secondly, it's about individuals. It's about having their own, hunger to change, their hunger to improve. I want to know how they, that I think, again, I think they often can't answer me these questions. Firstly, I often go and ask, well, how do you see yourself in 5 years in terms of gaming? It's a very difficult questions because, all they do is just 12 hours nonstop, playing when I was there. It's same as now. Nowadays, a lot of esports team that it's about the non-stop playing. It's about the practicing. So they won't see. They won't visualize themselves in 5 years' time. Therefore, it's very difficult to get them. I mean, motivated. They could be very aroused, but they're a lot motivated. They can have the short-term impact to win the first or second year of world championship, but after that, they will start collapsing because they're a lot motivated. They could be aroused. So individually, I have to find the way to get them motivated. It's different. Different players have different motivational method. Some of them, they're quite intrinsic. Some of them is extrinsic. So I have to use different method. I have to get to know the personality of the players, and of course, again, it's about setting baby steps, go with different players individually.
Yeah, it's fascinating, and I'm really, really interested in the political side of it. Within the group, you're saying that they've all got these very individual, egocentric goals that they're pushing towards. And I guess that's understandable within sport or esports that, athletes, they want the best for their high performance, of course. But if they're playing as part of a team, then there has to be some kind of cohesion. So can you give us an example of what a team building exercise, for want of a better word, or something that's directed at team building might look like?
Of course, to me, it's about distancing you, the team, and the normal activities. So it won't be playing esports. It could be having a game of, handball, or it could be playing board games, because I usually use board games because I think it's quite similar to esports, the board games. If you start playing board games, it's easy to get your fingers injured. In terms of esports, you're quite, you're gone if your players your fingers are injured. So I often use board game to start with. Of course, to build trust as well, I will use some team board games, so they can team up with one another, and I will start maybe spend a 2 hours time to get them to play with no purpose, just to enjoy. And after that, we might have a little dinner together. Then after the dinner, I will start bringing them purpose. For example, if I want to introduce communications, maybe I can I'm going to the first game of board game, you can't talk with your teammates, so you have to guess what they're doing. And after that, you can start talking. Then we have a little debrief sessions of how important is communications in terms of just board game. It's not about esports. And so how important is communications, and what did you do differently from the first board game that you can't talk, and second board game that you can talk? So that's one of the example that I did with my team.
That's really interesting. There's a practice that I sometimes do in football where it's either to address too much communication, as in, I'm on the ball and I've got eight teammates telling me what to do at the same time, or the complete opposite, where I've maybe got a team that, that don't speak very much at all. And it's just a small-sided game, normal game of football, but no one can speak, or only certain individuals can speak, and then just building that up. And it just has very similar tones to what you're describing there. But I understand what you're saying about some distance then from the actual activity that they do, and how important it is to get them away from that so that they can develop a little bit more social cohesion.
It's about distancing themselves from their normal activities. So first, they won't feel stress. Secondly, if again we play esports for team buildings, it's about winning again. It's about winning. It's about, how good am I? It's about showing how good I am as an esports player. But if I play a board game, everyone knows, it's just a board game. It won't, it's not some serious stuff. Even the staff is watching you. You win this board game. Next day you can still be a sub. You won't get started in esports even you win the board game. So it's nothing serious, nothing political, and only just a game. And it's about distancing themselves to the training.
That's interesting, though. So, I mean, have there been any times where you've put on a board game, and some of those political issues or desire to win, a competitive nature, has still caused problems?
Funny enough, I don't think so. It's just all gone, because everyone knows it's just a board game. Everyone knows what a board game is. It's a, it's an after party game. After party or during the parties, you just play board games sometimes. So actually, you can address that. The Because the one thing is very concerning me was the political issues. But if I go to a totally different and that something is doesn't matter to esports, they will start to becoming an normal human beings, just a friendly kid, because they're all they're all under 21 years old. They're a lot old, so they would just become a kid. I think it's like bringing back the childhood to them. So you're no longer a professional esports player, you're just a teenager. I think it actually addressed a lot of problems, including the problem you mentioned, political or competitiveness. It will actually address that. Of course, before that, I need to have a clear briefing and introductions with them. What I often do, sometimes I will ask the boss, to join as well to the board game, and the boss, you're allowed to kill him in the board game, or you're allowed to actually, I don't know, do something bad to him in terms of the board game, which is actually, you have this friendly dynamics. It's about, sometimes it's about the dynamics. How do you build the dynamics? How do you, when you're performing, of course the team, the individual is performing itself, but with the board, the staff, even the cleaner matters, they are all with the team. There's very the winning mentality is not just for the players, it's about the staff, the boss, it's about the whole club, actually behind the players. The players, of course, their performings, but that's what I did to increase the dynamics, to increase the togetherness, basically.
That the environment in which our players play and that teams operate, if we're not all on the same page, there isn't that cohesion, then of course that you're going to get even more political issues. Never mind the natural ones. Alex, I have really enjoyed that conversation, and I think there's much more that I would want to pick your brains on. Perhaps we can get you back another time. Good luck with the publication, and it sounds fascinating in terms of implementing or incorporating video game playing into a parent-child relationship. So I'll make sure that everyone has access to a link for that. A last
Thanks.
question for you: if you could have an audience with just one person, who would you choose?
It's the most difficult questions for today. I think still it will be my wife, it's about, again, it's about how family is very important to me, it's about person that could always, support me in ups and downs and stuff. So I would choose her because I need her support as a family member, as my wife. So if there's only one audience, of course I would choose my wife, for no doubts.
It's a really positive answer. No, wonderful. Thank you. Alex, thanks so much for your time today. If anyone wanted to reach out to you, to speak about what you do, what would be the best way to get hold of you?
I think could be linking, maybe.
By LinkedIn. Okay, I'll make sure that there's a link to your profile. And if anyone wants to reach out, and I encourage them to do so, then you can find Alex there. Alex, just leaves me to say, welcome to the tribe.
Great. Thanks a lot, team. Thanks for having me here. My pleasure.
Loved that chat with Alex. So interesting to hear and make connections between the esports and high performance sport domains, as we had touched on previously with Chris Perqui back in season one. My thanks to Alex for offering up his insights today. The music you're listening to is by BB Phoenix. You can find her details in the links. If you haven't already, please do subscribe and leave feedback so that we can keep growing the tribe. Thanks for being here, and we look forward to having you back next week.